Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Allegro Podcast. In this episode, I talk to Chris Lee. Chris is the athletic performance director and strength coach for Tin Man Elite, one of the biggest teams on the professional running circuit. Chris has a background in multiple endurance sports, including swimming and triathlon, and was formerly the head coach of the University of Colorado Boulder swim team. He's also the founder of Kinesis Integrated, a sports performance training company. This episode was especially great to record as Chris is an alumnus from my high school, and we talk a little bit about that, along with human performance, strength training, working with Tin Man Elite, endurance training, and much more. Hope you all enjoy.
Allegro.
Allegro. Thanks so much for joining me today, Chris. To start off this episode, can you talk a little bit about how you started your journey with endurance sports?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me, Sohan. Glad to give back to Parsippany Hills, my alma mater there. But yeah, I got into endurance sports because I was a swimmer through high school, through college, actually, and I was a sprinter, so in the 50 and the 100. And my friend in college introduced me to triathlon, and I thought, wow, this is kind of hard. I like hard, so let's give it a shot and see if we can't bridge the gap between being a power-based athlete to as pretty much as endurance as it gets in triathlon.
Awesome, yeah. So talking a little bit about like your beginning with swimming, you know, most of my training has to do with running as like a cross country and track runner. But can you talk a little bit about like the specifics of swimming training? Because like, I guess the running format traditionally, it's you have your easy days and then you have your workouts and then a long run. So how does swimming differ from like running?
So swimming training, the engine doesn't differ too much, right? The basic concepts that are still apply. Right, you have your aerobic base, aerobic capacity, anaerobic capacity, aerobic threshold, so on and so forth. But in swimming, you're not loading your tendons as much as you are in running. So that means you don't have to take as many rest days, right? So your tendons, your joints, they're not taking on any impact. So with swimming, you can kind of train at a higher intensity more frequently. In running, you have to be pretty tailored to each athlete and what kind of training methodology you're using. The biggest difference I've seen is when you're doing repeats, you can do swim repeats a lot harder for a lot longer, right? There's this unspoken equivalent of, say, you're doing the 100 meter in swimming. It's about equivalent to the 400 meter on the track. You can do a lot of 100 meter repeats at a pretty good pace. You can't do that many 400 meter repeats on the track at that high of a pace, right? You'll break down eventually or end up getting some kind of a little flare up or acute injury.
Yeah, I know Morgan Pearson, another Morris County guy, in one of podcast episodes that another podcast episodes that he was in, he mentioned how like one of the things about triathlon training is you don't have that much impact when you're swimming and biking. So you can get a lot of like volume and hours in when you're doing that kind of like training. So yeah, I definitely see that's really cool. Like the whole swimming training for triathlon, which would you say is your favorite of those three disciplines, swimming, biking, or running?
Ooh. For triathlon, I would have to go with riding the bike. I would say as a triathlete, you kind of need to love all three equally, but there's nothing like riding a bike and going really, really fast. And when you're coming downhill, unlike running, you don't have to really do anything, right? You just kind of fly and bomb downhill. Whereas running, you're still working quite a bit downhill. So it's nice to be able to cruise and enjoy some free speed.
Yeah, definitely. For my own experiences, like I said, I'm like primarily a runner, but just when I'm like casually biking, I feel like like as a beginner, like just biking uphill is so much harder than running uphill. But yeah, downhill is definitely easier as like when you're biking. But yeah, going uphill on a bike is very, very
Absolutely. Intense. If you look at some of the fastest known times or Strava segments in Boulder, the steeper it gets at a certain grade, all the runners have faster times than the cyclists.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah,
that leverage changes, right? You're like, oh, well, at a certain point, you're not generating that much enough power to go uphill fast enough. Right, and you're carrying the weight of a bike.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, transitioning to another topic. You know, you're in Boulder right now, Boulder, Colorado. I'd say like one of the biggest places in the country in terms of training, specifically for running. Like just at the top of my head, thinking about some other places, you have like Park City, Albuquerque, Flagstaff, but Boulder definitely has like that huge culture and community surrounding athletics. So can you talk a little bit about why, what drew you towards Boulder, Colorado?
Yeah, Boulder, Colorado. I remember being in, sitting at home in New Jersey, in Parsippany, and watching some videos about these Ironman races. And, you know, this guy, Craig Alexander, who trained in Boulder, a three-time world champion, being like, wow, that's cool, you know, and it seems like there's a lot of athletes out there. So after college, I got my ducks in a row, some certifications and whatnot, and said, you know, Boulder seems like a cool spot. Triathlon seems like a cool sport. It'd be a great challenge to see how far I could take it. So I got in a car and said, Boulder is going to be the spot, and had no job lined up or anything. I just said, I'll figure it out. Got my car with my bike, drove out, and the rest is kind of history, but it was more, you know, figuring it out for a couple of years and just enjoying just racing and seeing how far you could push, I could push my own body.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, I feel like I was introduced to Boulder with, like, a lot of the Tin Man Elite videos and, like, all of these runners who are documenting their training in Boulder. And it just definitely seems like one of those places that you want to be when you're training at a high level and just like trying to progress in the sport. Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that like community and culture in Boulder? Because I know a lot of people say like when you're going out on a run, you could see former Olympians, you could see just people jogging for fun. But how is that whole fitness culture like in that city?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think I've raced and traveled across the country, all over the place, and have visited many friends, have had some business opportunities in other cities as well. And there's nothing quite like Boulder to me. Obviously, I've lived here for 8 years, a little bit biased, but it makes it really easy to be very active. there's an ongoing joke here where, you know, you have FOMO, right? The fear of missing out on working out, because there's always someone doing something cool somewhere. So I think the community and the culture, it's more inspiration based, right? You're inspired by the people who came before you, right? You're running down a random running route and then you see a former gold medalist, or, you know, you're just going to a coffee shop and there's, you know, a former world champion, Emma Coburn, or, you know, some big name is just there. And the beauty of it is you get to know them as part of the community. A lot of my friends are high-level athletes as well, but when you get to know them, you realize they're just normal people as well, and they're happy to share their experience and go on a run with you, go on a bike ride with you. And I think that's kind of where the whole town has a little bit of camaraderie around, you know, just because you are faster doesn't mean you aren't working as hard, or someone else isn't working as hard as you. So it's a pretty unique experience. And I, like I said, I don't think I've seen anything like it anywhere else yet.
Yeah. That seems really amazing. That seems very like that. That's really cool. Just having all those like-minded driven people around you who are all trying to like achieve their goals. How's like the whole, like talking about like the location and the geography specifically, How's like having all the altitude, all those mountains, all those dirt roads, which there aren't many dirt roads here, I can say, but how's all of that, having that at like really close access?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a little different from running down Route 10. Yeah. You have some nice dirt roads with almost no cars. You can get into the mountains. And, yeah, you know, it's not like I'm looking out behind me making sure I'm not getting run over by a car. But altitude-wise, for anyone who doesn't think altitude kicks your butt, come out to Boulder and run up some mountains, and yeah, I think you'll experience it pretty quickly. But I think that's also another thing where being in the mountains, it keeps you humble. I don't care how fit you are. If you're a world champion, you try to run up a mountain pretty fast or a steep hill, and you're like, wow, yeah, that one hurt a little bit. So it's I think it's humbling, and that's why a lot of really good athletes end up coming here. They like to be humbled over and over again. It's, you know, I consider this like the Wall Street of endurance sports, where on the East Coast, you know, everyone's like, oh, Wall Street, that's where you want to be. It's competitive. It's an environment that drives the best to be even better. And it's really similar atmosphere here, just more on the health and the fitness side of things.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, that seems very, very, very cool. And like also just like having all of those hills and like that, the change in like, no, yeah, just talking about hills, like the one thing I will say here in New Jersey, there are a lot of hills, which is very good for training because like people say, hills are speed work in disguise, and it's just really good for strength. So yeah, no, it's really good that you guys have like all those hills, all those trails. Amazing for training. But yeah, talking about a little bit of a different topic, on Tin Man Elite's website, it said that you're the athletic performance director and strength coach. So can you talk a little bit about how you started working with Tin Man Elite and the athletes there?
Actually, it was through Morgan Pearson, who's a Morris County guy, but he's a triathlete now. I started working with him and his buddy Adam Peterman actually first, and you know, kind of word of mouth spread, and there was a certain athlete with an injury on Tin Man Elite, and they sought me out, and we worked through that injury, got this person back to better than he was when he was healthy, and started working with another athlete one after another, and next thing you know, I was already working with the whole team. And yeah, from there, we had a discussion saying, hey, you know, do you guys want to be the best? If so, yes, I write strength programs, and I also do a lot more of these, the exercise science stuff, the physiology, the data, and figuring out what gadgets, what modalities you want to use to get these guys to the highest level. And I guess the team culture at the time was, you know, let's get after it. Let's, you know, leave no stone unturned to try to become the best we can. So a lot of that involved analyzing Whoop, analyzing other data, and doing some gait analysis, and just making sure we were looking at every possible aspect beyond just the gym, beyond just the track. So yeah, it was kind of a waterfall effect, right? Where, you know, Morgan and Adam were some of my first clients, and I think they saw the value of what I was doing. And so they introduced me to Tin Man guys. And at that time, it wasn't quite what people know Tin Man Elite now. It was a really different bare bones Tin Man Elite where, you know, it was just a couple guys out here grinding. Obviously the team has grown a lot now, and you know, there's been some coaching changes and whatnot, but yeah, at that time they're like, this, you know, we need some pieces to fill in the puzzle here, and you know, that's where I came in, just as another piece of the puzzle to try to put the big picture together.
Awesome. Yeah, Can you talk a little bit more about like the process or like the system that you have with the Tin Man Elite athletes? I know in like during the pandemic, the early pandemic, they had like one of the like a day in the life videos of a professional runner, and they showed like themselves getting on a Zoom call with you and working out. So how's like the system like where you're working with all of them?
Yeah, back to the video, that was an interesting time. So all of my athletes that I work with, I said, hey, you know, we're closing down, we're going to be safe. I have a gym that I own, and I said, come by, pick up equipment, bring it home, and we will do Zoom sessions to keep you healthy and keep you ready to go, right? And so beyond the Tin Man guys, you know, I have a lot of other world-class athletes I work with. They came to the gym, picked up equipment. I kind of spaced it out so enough was available to go around. And, you know, we just set up at-home sessions like nothing changed. But the system was for the team was that I was at the track at most of their big workouts. And what I do there is I take notes, right? I observe and I watch the athletes move. I watch them getting fatigued. If they're getting fatigued, what's happening to their form? So I could see in person where their deficiencies were, right? And then it's going back to the drawing board, seeing how each person can improve on their weaknesses while maintaining their strength, right? If they're lacking a little bit of kick at the end, their posture is failing, then we need to work on some postural integrity there and some endurance there. But ultimately, it's to simplify the system. It's just seeing what each athlete's body and what they are telling me they need to work on. My philosophy is that an athlete is their own best coach. As a coach, you're just there to interpret the signs and the feedback an athlete gives you and decide on the proper protocol to move forward, right? So that was ultimately the structure of what I did with the Tin Man guys. And, you know, that process is no different from any other athlete I work with. I think whether you are going to be an Olympian or you are going to be, you know, just starting your first marathon, my philosophy is, you know, no one is more important, right? I'm going to train everyone the exact same way. So that system and that philosophy kind of extends beyond just the team as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. That makes sense. And first, yeah, I just want to say, yeah, that was like great adapting to like those like early pandemic conditions, having like all the people getting like the weights and everything. That's very cool that you guys did that. So you talked a little bit about like all analyzing everyone's mechanics, the specific movements, and understanding how everyone's running. Can you talk about the incorporation of strength training to like a runner's training? Like why is strength training important, and why do you think people should do more than just run to become a better runner?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the importance of strength training goes beyond why runners should, right? I love simplifying things and breaking them down. So a runner, an endurance runner, participates in the sport of running. If you are a participant of a sport, you are an athlete. If you are an athlete, there are basic foundations and fundamentals you have to be a successful athlete, right? And extrapolate that back up. Those same principles apply to being a endurance runner or distance runner, right? And with that being said, you need to have some basic fundamentals of mobility, stability, strength, top end strength, power, right? All these fundamentals need to be there, right? And they need to exist in multiple planes, right? Frontal, sagittal, blah, blah, blah. All these basic foundations, fundamentals, need to exist. If some of them don't, the biggest thing I would say is core. If your core strength isn't good, and that includes your hips, right, your trunk, then there's no point of really addressing much else if you don't have that foundation, right? And that's actually a component of strength training a lot of people don't really think of. They're like, oh, you know, I'm doing some strength work. I'm going to squat, bench press, deadlift, all the big movements, right? Well, that's all great, but if your core isn't strong, you might as well just go shoot a cannon off a canoe, right? That's the old saying. That's actually the biggest thing I notice between a good athlete and a great athlete is how well they use their core. Usually, the better the athlete, the better their control of their core is, from what I've observed. Totally anecdotal, not too much research behind that, but I've seen it. So that's definitely something really interesting. But yeah, I think a lot of endurance athletes, triathletes, runners, cyclists, whatever it may be, they start specifying sport-specific training too early, and they don't set a strong foundation. Right. So your engine might be strong, but your chassis, if the rest of your body isn't very strong, that's going to break down. Then you get injured, and if you're injured, you're not fast. Right? So you're not strong. So that's another oversimplification, but it's like, hey, oh, you have a broken leg. Well, you may have been fast, but now you're not fast because you can't run. So those base fundamentals are the importance of strength training.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's a brilliant explanation and definitely explained some things to me. I'm trying to get much more into doing all of the different exercises in strength training. But I will say one thing that I've consistently incorporated throughout my high school years is doing one hip strengthening routine. It's one called like the Myrtle hip strengthening. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called. And then I also do planks a lot, which is definitely good for core, or at least according to my research, it is. So yeah, I will say like I've definitely added those into my I've definitely incorporated those into like my training routine. But yeah, it's very interesting to hear that the fundamentals are extremely important to become a better athlete in general. So yeah, speaking on like a similar topic, what are some key exercises that you recommend people work on? Obviously, you said the fundamentals are very important, making sure like your core is strong and everything. But yeah, what are some key exercises that you believe help you become a better athlete?
Yeah, so there's, I think one of the best ones is the dead bug for your core. The dead bug, the plank is good if you're doing it correctly. I think your pelvic position is very key there. A lot of people are not doing that correctly. I won't elaborate too much on that. That's kind of its own topic. But there's obviously, if you can master the deadlift, I would say mastering the deadlift is really important. Hip hinging is one of the most important exercises you can do. For a runner, incorporating what I call a spring foot position. Sorry, I can't take credit for that. I'll have to think of the strength coach who coined it, that phrase. But basically, it's when you are doing a heel float. So you're doing a reverse lunge or a walking lunge, and your heel is just hovering above the ground. Because we're trying to generate some spring in our step. And basically, that is taxing the soleus, right? You have your gastroc soleus complex, which is your calves. The gastroc is the cooler looking muscle, right, behind your leg. It's got like two little muscle bellies. The soleus is long and it's underneath it, but that is very active, and it's probably one of the most important muscles for a runner to work on. Right? So that's the spring foot position is not a specific exercise, but it's a position to incorporate into exercises that's really effective. Three, you have your soleus raise. We just talked about the soleus, right? Keeping that soleus strong is really, really, really important. It's going to help prevent some Achilles issues if that soleus is contracting well, lengthening well, and strong enough in that entire chain there. And then next up the chain, you have hamstrings. I feel like hamstrings are always an undertrained muscle when it comes to endurance runners. Sprinters, they're usually pretty strong when they hamstrings, right? But a lot of runners get hamstring strains or high hamstring tendinopathy. And one, their hamstrings are weak, and two, their glutes are weak. So those are two more exercises there, hamstring curls and glute bridges, that are super important. And then I think one last exercise is farmer's carries that are progressing to overhead farmer's carries. You try picking up two heavy weights and walking, you feel your core getting tired and your traps and your posture, right? Running is, all we're doing is overcoming gravity, right? And friction. So, and maybe wind resistance if you want to get a little bit more fancy. But, you know, if you think about it, farmer's carries, you are just accentuating gravity, right? And we are just learning how to stay upright against gravity. But over time in a race, when you see people get tired, they start slouching. And that is just the effect of gravity. So they have poor endurance in resisting gravity, if you want to simplify it that way. But yeah, there's so many key exercises and concepts. And I'm not sure if you saw the PDF I put out, but I wrote a 50 exercises and key concepts. Like, I call it the Spark Notes for runners. And I put it out on my website. If you subscribe to the website, it will send you an email and you can download this PDF. And it is 50 exercises and concepts that I think are super important for runners to start incorporating or understand. And there's videos of me explaining every exercise. So I can send that over to you and then you can link it. And it's free. It's just to get some information out there that some people may not already know. You know, hey, if someone knows all of it, congratulations, you've done your homework. But probably not.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And it's so interesting that a lot of those exercises that you mentioned are things that you can do at home. You don't need like intense weight or like intense equipment. You could do a lot of those things, like many things, body weight, and then like things like farmer's carry, you can just get like objects. So those are definitely like exercises that a lot of people could incorporate into their training. And I'm definitely going to be incorporating some of that stuff in, or like all that stuff in my strength training. But yeah, on a similar note, when I was like looking at like all of the stuff that you've done relating to strength training, I came across several things on Runner's World, and like they had like a video there, and it was extremely high production, which is really cool. And it was a very interesting article talking about like cross training and strength training, and you're giving like a workout routine. So can you talk a little bit about the like the process of working with Runner's World, which I consider one of like the major publications in the running world. So yeah, what was that whole process like?
Yeah, that was a really, really fun experience. Like you said, studio production. We were in a studio with, I forget what the total was. I think the camera equipment totaled like $3 million or something. So there's four different cameras and I don't even know what they're called, you know. But it was a really fun experience, I think, that when I decided to go ahead and agree to working with Runner's World, I had never done a video shoot like that. I'm good at creating programs, right? That's what I do all day, every day. I created the program for mostly at home, and there's some mobility involved, but there's also a 30-day challenge on their app called All Out Studio. But shooting it was really interesting, much different from training someone in person. You're looking at a camera with an invisible audience, and you know there's people telling you to use different phrasing, different wording. Then you're mumbling and jumbling your words because you're not used to it. And you know there's lights on you. There's even a makeup person, which is really interesting. I've never had that done before. You know, when you start sweating, someone comes over and dabs the sweat off of you. But yeah, it was definitely a really interesting experience, and it was a great opportunity to in my opinion, get some really good information out there for people to access. You know, I think the more information that's out there, the better. There's so many people who enjoy running, and you know, also so many people who get injured. So if we can help people get be less injury prone, then that's a big win.
Yeah, yeah, it's so amazing how you're putting all this like content and information out to help people. And I'll definitely link all that stuff in the show notes for this podcast episode. Talking about, like, just to wrap up the podcast, another topic though that you have experience in is gait analysis, and you mentioned it previously a little bit earlier on in the episode. Can you talk a little bit about what that's all about? Because I know that's an extremely like important thing that can really help you step up your running by understanding like your mechanics and your movement. So can you talk about your work with gait analysis?
Totally. Yeah. We have a 3D gait analysis system, and the software we use is RunDNA. It is made by a PT by the name of Doug Adams, and he created a gait analysis system specifically for running. And the biggest things I think with gait is, one, understanding that there is no perfect gait, but there are key red flags, right? Or biomechanical asymmetries that should be addressed. And it is a very joint by joint approach, right? We're looking at every single joint angle. We're looking at supination, pronation, internal, external rotation, hip drop, ground contact time, right? A lot of the metrics that the human eye cannot capture. Or even if we can capture it with an iPad and try to draw or time these things, we're not going to have accurate metrics. All right, so what the gait analysis does is really allows us to get very accurate metrics to host a conversation with an athlete about, right? So we can see the same thing. And gait is so important because it is how you are choosing to interact with gravity, right? And how you're choosing to use different tension lines in your body, how you're choosing to, or how the body is choosing for you on how to move, right? Big issue here, we'll choose an easy one, overstriding, right? We hear it all the time.
Yeah.
You're overstriding, you're striking with your heel, stop overstriding, right? And I laugh when I hear that because I hate it when people say, stop overstriding, strike midfoot. Okay, I understand that, but why is someone overstriding? That's what we're looking at, right? Why is someone heel striking, right? Why are these things happening? And the gait analysis is a really nice tool to help us see that, right? To break things down. But ultimately, every gait analysis I do with, along with the software, along with the 3D gait analysis capture, I do a normal smartphone or iPad capture. Because ultimately running, when you run, for example, like you're not thinking, I need to move my ankle, my knee, my hip into extension at this angle, right? It's not one thing at a time, it's one motion, right? You're just running. So on top of all these great metrics, we need to be able to see someone running and piece together the big picture, right? So, for example, I think the metrics provide a great talking point, but you need to be able to see the picture as a whole, right? And that's the puzzle, right? You can have all the right puzzle pieces, but if they're not put in the right order, you don't have a good picture. And seeing the big picture is super important for analyzing gait as well. So just because someone comes up to you and tells you, hey, you are overstriding and your hips collapsing, you need to work on your glute med, which is a very popular analysis. And I would challenge the thought process to say, okay, the hip is dropping. Is it because of the glute med, or is it coming from the foot ankle complex, right? Or is it coming from somewhere else? Is there a lack of thoracic mobility up top? You know, what else is going on that could be causing this hip to collapse, right? And that's, again, that's where the gait analysis shows us a lot. We can see the hips collapsing, right? But we can also see that this person has, you know, 12 degrees of pronation, right? So they're over pronating, causing the foot and ankle to be a unstable platform. Well, if you try to stabilize in an unstable platform, I don't care how strong your glutes are, you're not going to be stable, right? So simple as that, in a way of just, you know, checking all the boxes and making sure you're not missing anything. And ultimately, that can be make or break for you as an athlete in, one, how fast you run, how injury resistant you are, or how injury prone you are, right? And probably how much you enjoy running. If you have a really bad gait, you probably don't enjoy running as much because it probably doesn't feel as good. So, you know, gait can account for a lot of things there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's very interesting, like looking at the big picture and also looking, trying to understand like the root causes of specific movements, and also just how technology is being used to help runners and athletes in general, like just progress in the sport. Very, very interesting stuff. Yeah, to wrap up this episode, I guess, what are some things that you're looking forward to in these next few months, whether it's like your coaching, like for your business pursuits, like what are some things that you're looking forward to coming up?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having some time to chill out. I think leading into the Olympics, it was, you know, full steam ahead. But business wise, I think, and even just in the running world, it's the first time I'll be trying to release what I call live programming. And I've written some programs, basically foundations of running. I call it Running Revolutionized Phase 1, Phase 2, and so on and so forth. Created a Achilles program, an off-season program. You know, basically just putting stuff out there for people to start using and to have some resources you can trust. But I realized that, you know, the accountability is huge, and I created a live programming, so it's remote programming, and every week we go through everyone's metrics and feedback and see what we need to adjust the next week. So say we have, you know, a bunch of people signed up, and, you know, we're looking at week by week, what is everyone saying? Are they really tired? Do we need to back off for a week and, you know, deload a little bit? Are we progressing the weight correctly? Is it getting too easy? Then we need to increase the weight a little bit, right? And, you know, setting that up via the Train Heroic platform, which is what I use for remote programming, is something I'm pretty excited to get into. I think it's going to give me the ability to help a lot more people progress correctly, which in the beginning, I always laugh with my athletes. It doesn't matter who I work with. If you're about to go to the Olympics, if you don't have the fundamentals down, I'm going to start you easy, and we're going to make sure you have those key pieces right before you go in back squat. And in the beginning, first 4 weeks is always a slower process, and people are sometimes like, what the heck? I'm not lifting any weights. I'm like, okay, well, wait till week eight, and then you'll be lifting weight and you'll feel a lot better doing it. So pretty excited to get that launched and, you know, trying to reach as many people and maybe blow some people's minds and that think they're really strong. And then we're like, whoa, oh my God, I need to work on all these little things. That's always kind of fun for me to see what little things we can find and start tweaking.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Look forward to seeing like all of that stuff in the near future. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. Like a lot, all the stuff that you shared is definitely going to be useful for people listening to this episode. And yeah, thank you so much. And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. If I'm back home in Parsippany, we'll go for a little jog, as long as you don't drop me.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Thank you so much, Chris.
No, yeah, you got it.